Welcome to TJ Frog's podcast, where I chat about my knitting, Dorset buttons, and creativity in general, as well as sharing my love of Scotland, especially the Highlands and Islands. Hello, I'm Tanya, aka TJ Frog, or sometimes called the Button Lady. And in my creative business, I predominantly make and promote the traditional craft of Dorset buttons, which dates back to the early 1600s, a cottage industry that employed many people in Dorset on the south coast of England. Brought up in Dorset, I now live on the Isle of Skye, and wherever you may be in the world, welcome and thank you for joining me for my 22nd episode, Getting Back on Track. For you in this episode, I have the weather, what's been happening in 2019, the latter part of winter and early spring, making. I have reassessed where I'm at with lingering projects and talk about what I've made recently. Dorset buttons, I bring you up to date on where you can find me in 2019, teaching and exhibiting. The local lowdown, give you a brief update on the co-op in Broadford. And finally, the interview across the bridge, an interview with Zoli, co-founder and owner of BFab Be Creative in Edinburgh. Getting back on track. Well, that didn't go according to plan. I'm already, at least 2 weeks, I think, later than I intended after I got poorly. I just had this cough. So after finally starting to feel a bit better, having had all that exhaustion post-Edinburgh, I got this cough, which just kept getting worse the more I talked. And then my voice would start going, and it really was not conducive to recording a podcast. It was very frustrating. I was literally just having to rest my voice. Fingers crossed, I'm finally getting back on track after the disruptive winter months that we had, and I'm nigh on back to feeling like myself again. I've spent some time the past few weeks having a good sort out, really, reviewing where I'm at, stock taking, planning, I suppose a little spring clean of my business, and it feels good. I have a lot happening this year, which you'll hear about in the Dorset button section, and there's also a lot more always going on behind the scenes. It's about taking the actions now and putting all those plans into place. The longer, lighter days are here though, and I'm definitely feeling more energised, although I'm still trying to take things steady and not overdo it. The weather. This has been a pretty good winter for us. Very mild compared to last year. Very little snow on the ground and even on the mountains. What snow has fallen on the mountaintops has quickly been washed away or melted away with the rain or the warmer temperatures. We've had what I would call one bad storm in February. If you visited then, you were very, very unlucky. Apart from that, 2019 weather has been very kind to us. The daffodils just seem to bloom much earlier this year and loads more. I loved just all those golden heads. We get a lot round where we are and it's just an amazing sight. And they quickly got replaced with the gorse, which is such a vibrant yellowy goldy colour. And then in contrast, you have the primroses like a little carpet on the ground in a real pale lemony colour. And now we've just had all the bluebells. Oh, incredible. On our corner of Skye, we had a lot more in our garden this year. They seem to sort of rotate where they are in big clusters year on year. And down the road from us, the wild garlic is out. And I love the waft of that coming through as I drive down the road. Easter was amazing. Great for the kids' holidays and for people visiting the area. Very dry and lots of sunshine. We had a brief cold spell after that with a very short-lived dusting of snow on the higher mountain tops. And we're back to sunshine again and nice weather. There's the odd cool breeze every now and again, but if the sun is shining, I'm happy. And the lambs on Skye have certainly all been welcomed into this world with some pleasant temperatures. Making. As well as a spring clean in my business, I've started to give our house some much needed attention, and that is another huge work in progress. With all the disruptions we've had, it's been a bit kind of like in and out, in and out, in and out. And yeah, the housework, the cleaning, all that stuff sorting out has just really taken a back step. And it's at the point now where we're like, ooh, we need to get on top of this, and house maintenance and all those other things. It's meant, though, that as I have been doing some sorting out, I've come across some lingering projects and projects that I've not been wearing. It turned out that some needed a handful of ends sewing in. And of course, there were some projects that needed blocking. Neither of these jobs, as you know, are my favourite. It always seems I'm more eager to cast on the next project and get my knitting hands going. Having said that, ultimately, I always like to finish things, whatever it may be. I'm not just talking about knitting projects. Sometimes it might be a few years down the line. I will always, always finish though. And for some bizarre reason, and I do not know where this came from, being poorly, I had this sudden urge to do some finishing off of projects. There has to be an upside of being ill, I suppose, and that was it. I think it was just, I wanted some little things to do, and somehow they just appealed. And I think also because I'd got to the stage where the house really needs sorting out, and these projects are just laying there, and I'm not using them, I'm not wearing them, and you know, this is criminal. I've spent hours and hours and hours making these. Let's start wearing them and getting use out of them. If you've been with me since the early days of my podcast, you'll know that right back at the beginning, I think it was the second episode, I talked about all my works in progress, although I think I later on decided that they were actually all unfinished objects because they'd been left hanging around for a long time. There was the Stephen West Gullfoss, which is like a poncho come shawl come waistcoat. And it's literally made up from a square and a rectangle. And it needed sewing together, which I did, and I reported back on that. I haven't worn it though. How bad is that? I looked at it. What was it about it that meant that I hadn't yet worn it? Well, it had three ends that I hadn't sewn in. Can you believe that? Three ends. And I think the other thing is, it's an item that is crying out for a Dorset button brooch. Absolutely crying out for one. Because I've done it in four colours of Rowan felted tweed. It's I don't know the actual main colours, what the Rowan names are for them, but it's a pale blue, a black, I think, a sort of slate black, a gold, and a sort of orangey, burnt orange colour. And yeah, it's crying out for a Dorset button. So I am making a decision here and now that by the next episode, I will have made that button and I will be wearing it. There you go. I've made myself accountable. The Susan Crawford Blanche top, that had been finished. That had been blocked. Again, there were just a handful of ends that needed weaving in. I've done those. That is ready to be worn. And what about those egg slippers from Rowan Magazine 52? Do you remember those? Well, having mentioned them right at the beginning of when I first started this podcast, if we then jump forward to episode 15, I got to the stage where all 14 pieces had been made, blocked, and were ready to be sewn up. And again, they all fell on the all too difficult pile. Ooh, sewing up, don't like doing this. I've got 14 pieces to sew together. I've started doing it. Yes, hooray, at last. There was a problem though. I don't know if you recall, but I had already had to do one of the Fair Isle pieces because they were knitted up in my earlier days of knitting when my tension was totally off and they were very small. And as I started to sew these pieces together, what I found is a similar problem because there's seven pieces to each slipper and the top of the foot and the front and the back of the lower leg each have a front and an inner piece. And each of the front and inner pieces are sewn together. And the inner pieces are knitted on size 8 needles in Rowan British Breeds Buchel, which is quite a chunky, knobbly wool, for want of a better description. And I'd just done them too small. I mean, there was no way I could... I'd already blocked them. You know, I couldn't stretch them anymore to match the front piece. So I had to frog those and knit them all again, which I did about 3 weeks ago. And I'm now back to sewing them together. So they're not finished yet. We're not quite ready for the drum roll of the ongoing egg slippers, but we're nearly, nearly there. I just feel good, though, that this project has taken another step forward. Might be slow, but it's getting there. Next up, I decided to do some blocking, and goodness only knows where the motivation came from to do this. I was definitely not feeling right. Blocking. I was on a roll. I think part of it, I need to thank Ella, Gift Not Girl, on Instagram, because Ella had posted a picture of some blocking that she was doing. And I can't remember now, 3 or 4 pieces. And she's saying she's having a blocking party. And I was like, yes, we all need to have a blocking party. And I think actually this was in my mind. I have got enough pieces to have my own blocking party. Let's get on with it. And that's what I did. So far, I have blocked my Mustard Seeds shawl by Boonitz, my Wintertime shawl by Sarah Alderson, which is knitted up in my own limestone, Pole Dorset and Hebridean mixed yarn. And also the shawl that I purchased from, or the shawl kit I purchased from Edinburgh Yarn Festival, Mayak, Baby Yak and Silk. I still have 3 more shawls to block. How could I get to this stage, hey? 2 are very straightforward. The third one is, in my opinion, more complicated, and I'm going to tell you about them next time. So again, making myself accountable to start the blocking process for those as well. I haven't managed to photograph all these projects yet, other than in a pile, which I will put onto my show notes. So in slow time, I will get some photos done of me wearing each of these items I've just talked about. A few little bits done then, and some projects to show, some final finished products, no ends left to sew in. It feels incredibly good, really good. And I'm looking forward to wearing all these items as well. I've also done some more work on my Islay jacket by Di Gilpin. I have finished the back and I'm onto the left front side. I'm doing the small size, and I tried on their small sample back at one of the shows and it was a bit tight on the bust. So I need to do some extra increases, and I don't like where I've put them and how it's coming out. It's affected the pattern too much for me. So I've got to frog this back and change where those increases go. So I'll give you a little more info on that when I get a bit further along with it. I've started Tegna by Caitlin Hunter of Boylan Knits. Some time ago, I started this in a linen yarn, which I found quite difficult to work with for the lace border. I just was not enjoying it at all and decided to not go any further. I love the pattern though, so I went into my stash where I had 2 skeins of 4-ply British Blueface Leicester from Nick of Yarns from the Plain, and I purchased that back at the Caithness Craft Collective retreat when Nick had a little pop-up shop. My idea was always that this was going to be a tea top of some sort. It's a really vibrant colour and it's knitting up really well. I'm not going to give any more away at the moment. I will have more news of that in my next episode, and you might see something on social media with it too. I said this before, I'm definitely about the process, the motion of doing, of using my hands, of clearing my mind. And it gives me a great sense of relaxation. And for some reason, I just don't get that same sense of relaxation or being in the moment or achievement with sewing in ends of blocking, even though it makes me happy when I finally finish something and, more importantly, get to wear it and use it. It's just about timing and being in the mood. I totally have to be in the mood to weave in ends and to block, whereas knitting anytime. Just need to pick that up and go. go with it. Back in January, which seems so long ago now, I can't believe that May is marching on and we're nearly into June. I went to New York to the New York Vogue live knitting show, and I went with my friend Christina. It was in the midst of quite a difficult time for me, and I wasn't really sure about going, if I should go, would I enjoy it, could I put my mind to it. To be honest, I'm glad I did go. It gave me a much needed little break for a long weekend with great company, and we packed a lot in, so we were busy from when we woke up to when we went to sleep. Yeah, it was a welcome distraction from everything that was going on, despite the fact, you know, I was still thinking about home. I was just very fortunate to be able to go there and to do some workshops as well with some very talented designers, which was my main aim going there. Because as I've mentioned before, when I'm exhibiting at shows here in the UK, it's really not easy to be doing workshops as well. I did a mosaic knitting workshop with Melanie Berg. And if you don't know Melanie's work and you particularly like shawls, then do take a look at her stuff. I love her work, and I could quite happily work my way through knitting all of her shawls. I've done mosaic knitting before, albeit a long time ago, and the focus of this workshop was about being able to design your own mosaic shawl. And I particularly love the fact this had a design aspect to it, and it's given me some confidence because I designed a mosaic cowl for myself a few years ago and it needs reworking. It was never quite right, and this workshop really helped me with that. I did shadow or illusion knitting with Franklin Habit. I have to be honest, I wasn't sure about this, although intrigued enough to go on the workshop. Franklin's very talented, extremely funny, a great teacher, and he had some wonderful examples with him to show us. And if you don't know anything about shadow or illusion knitting, then have a look. It's a lovely way to put messages and motifs into your knitting. The motifs are created through alternating between two colours of yarn, so you're in effect knitting a stripe, and you're also using knit and purl stitches. And when the knitted fabric is moved around in certain planes and from particular angles, the motif will appear as one colour where the stitches which are raised dominate over the flat stitches of the other colour. That's quite difficult to explain. I'm not sure I've explained it very well. This is when a visual podcast would be better. Let's see if I can explain this a bit better. Imagine a stripy scarf alternating light and dark colour each row. And you have a heart motif in the centre of that scarf. The heart motif would be created, for example, on the dark colour rows using raised stitches, and they would be the ones that when you move the scarf in certain planes and look at it from certain angles would stand out. Hopefully that explains it a bit better. I will put a picture in the show notes of the little sample that I did, so I will put a photo looking down on it and a photo across the angle. It certainly challenged me and it gave me a lot to think about, and I've had a little play with a couple of ideas. They need more work yet before I'm ready to reveal them. I also did swing knitting with Nikki Epstein, which is a variation on short row shaping and creates sections of curved knitting, and that was really interesting. And finally, I did a class with Anna Maltz on marlies, a technique where you use two separate colours and then join them to make a third colour within the knitting fabric. Anna has published a book on this technique called Marlies, A New Direction in Knitting, and the workshop was based around one of the patterns, some fingerless mitts that are in that book. Each of these workshops were very thought-provoking for me, and in their own way, whether big or small, gave me ideas that I want to incorporate into my work. Much, much longer plan and aim, nevertheless very exciting. I only made 3 yarn purchases at New York, which I thought was very reserved. Last year on Sky, I met Jerry and her daughter Irina, who run a farm in Pennsylvania, and I would love to visit their farm and shop one day. Their company is called Flying Fibres, and they support British and American fibre and yarn, and they stock products from various companies as well as products from their own flock of rare breed British sheep, which includes Wensleydale, Leicester Longwool and Teeswater. They were exhibiting at New York, and it was lovely and very unexpected to see them and have a chance to catch up with them. I purchased 100 grams of their Leicester Longwool, which is a sport weight and comes from the fleeces of Fred and Primrose. Oh, I love things like that. This wool is a real deep, rich, creamy colour. It reminds me of the crust that you get on clotted cream, that sort of colour. Oh, it's really, yeah, very creamy. And I'm going to make a hat from it. It's very soft and I think it's going to be really cosy. Next up, destined to be a cow, I got 85 grams worsted weight, and this is a mix of 70% alpaca, 10% mohair and 20% US grown rambouillet, I think that's how you say it. And this was from Long Island Yarn and Farm. I'd not heard of rambouillet before. Having looked at it across on the internet, I understand it has its origins in Spanish merino. This is certainly an incredibly soft mix. It's made of two plies and it's a very plump yarn. The colour's called Eclipse and there's only 22 skeins, and I got the number 20 skein. And it has this natural colour, almost like a deep, dark grey, dark brown mixed with this sort of slight mottled effect of a lighter grey. It's beautiful. And I had seen this company at New York 2 years ago and had liked their products, so this is quite a considered purchase. Unlike my final purchase, which was a bit of a spur of the moment, all because the colours in it, which were silvers, greys, merging into greens, this lovely tonal effect, they went perfectly with the dress I was wearing. Definitely a one skein shawl for this. And it will go with the dress, the said dress, which is a mixture of greys and green. And the yarn is a merino silk mix, two plies fingering weight with a high twist. I think it's going to make a lovely shawl. One other trip I made on a personal level was a weekend in London, which was a couple of weeks after Edinburgh, when I was just totally, totally exhausted. And I'm going to save talking about that until next episode. Moving on to Dorset Buttons then. I've ended up having a bit more of a break post-Edinburgh than I had really planned because of not feeling particularly great or with it, which I think has done me some good, although there are a lot of shows still to come this year and time is marching on. A couple of weeks ago, I had a wool tour group here to Skye from the States. I love doing these. It just is great. There are so many wool, textile, fibre-related businesses on Skye, and fantastic for tours to come here now. There are just some great things to do and to see, as well as being in fantastic scenery. And for this particular group, the weather was spot on. They had amazing weather. I was a little bit worried that my voice wasn't going to stand up because I was just coming at the end of the cough. It did hold up for the workshop, but I struggled with it then a couple of days afterwards. You may be aware that this past weekend, Shetland Wool Week, which will be celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, launched its ticket sales, and what an amazing programme. They always have a great programme, but this year, wow, it just elevated to another level with knitting, spinning, crafting workshops, exhibitions, meetups, talks, tours. Ah, so many different things to choose from, and lots of very happy people, lots of disappointed people. The workshops just pretty much sold out. I think there's a few odd tickets here and there if you're still looking. Fantastic for the organisers. What I would say is if you did miss out, just even being at Shetland Wool Week, the exhibitions and the talks and the drop-ins, there are some fantastic things going on. I am incredibly honoured to be going back to teach again at Shetland Wool Week. I'm very humbled that both my workshops sold out pretty quick. My imminent outings are here in the Highlands. This week on Friday, I will be back at Plockton for the local craft fair, and then we'll be popping over to Dingwall for the Highland Wool Textiles Show on Saturday, the 25th of May. 2 weeks later, I will be exhibiting Aberdeen Yarn Fest on Sunday, the 9th of June, which is being held at the Doubletree Hilton Aberdeen Treetops Hotel from 10 until 5. Last year was their first year of holding this show. It was a great one-day show. There was much local support, a great mix of vendors. They've expanded the number of vendors that they can take this year. Still a one-day show. There's also a great workshop programme, which is on the Sunday and also on the Saturday the 8th. And the workshops on the Saturday are being held at John Lewis in the Bon Accord Centre in Aberdeen, and on the Sunday they're at the hotel. If you are in the area or thinking of coming along, have a check out on their website of the events that they're planning over those 2 days. And I hope to see some of you there. I'm teaching the Dorset Button cross wheel on the Saturday from 10 till 1, and Dorset Buttons adding beads 2 ways on Sunday from 9:30 till 12:30. And there's still some places up for grabs on those workshops, as well as places on some of their other workshops, which include knitting, crochet, weaving and needle felting. There might be something there for you if you are coming along. Just under 3 weeks later, we will be making our way down to Cumbria for Woolfest, which is on the 28th and 29th of June. This will be my third year exhibiting at Woolfest. It's a lovely show. I love the atmosphere here. It's the animals. Having the animals there, it's a very, very different feel. And my last show for the summer will be Woolness in Newcastle. It's their first year. That's on the 3rd and 4th of August. And I'm going to chat a bit more about that in my next episode. I'm also delivering 2 workshops there. Again, the Dorset Button cross wheel on Saturday, the 3rd of August, 10 to 1. And Dorset Buttons adding beads 2 ways on Sunday, the 4th of August, from 1:30 till 4:30. On Saturday the 24th of August, I'm going to be exhibiting at Wool at Portsoy, which is in Aberdeenshire on the Moray Forth coast. This event started 2 years ago, has always been on my list, but it's always clashed with something else that we've had going on, although this year it doesn't. So we're off to be part of that. It's organised by the Portsoy Bothy Knitters, and they meet once a week. And they do knitting for charity. And they hold this event in 2 venues across the town. And I'm very much looking forward to being part of this community organised event. And finally, later in the year, I will be returning to Loch Ness Knit Fest. I will be at the Marketplace, which is running on the 18th and 19th of October. And I will be doing a Dorset Button beaded crosswheel class on Thursday the 17th from 2 till 5 p.m. Whew, quite a lot going on. As you can see, having not really been that well the last few weeks, I've got a lot of catching up to do and a lot to get prepared. And as I said, if Shetland Wool Week is not part of your plans this year, then maybe I will get to meet you at some of the other events I've just listed that are happening over the course of the year. The other big thing that we're about to start work on is the website. It's due a makeover, and we've got a few ideas of how to reorganise the information and give you more information on some of the products that we have. Lots to keep me busy, and also to keep my TJ Frog staff busy. On to the Sky Focus, starting with the local lowdown. Back in November, I mentioned the Co-op in Broadford. Yes. I mean, this is really important to us. This is our nearest supermarket, 21 miles away, nearly a 40-minute drive, depending on what the weather's like and how much traffic there is. It was getting a facelift, for those of you who know it, who may either live on Sky or visit Sky. And we now have an upgraded Co-op which they did over the winter months without closing the store. And if you saw what it was like beforehand and what it is like now, that is quite a feat. I'm incredibly impressed with what they achieved with minimum disruption. Yeah, we've got this store that's not only bigger, that looks great, there's more range, hence we've got more choice. And it's just got quite a different feel to it. And the garage forecourt has also been redone. All looks so much smarter. That's got its own little shop now rather than being in the co-op area. The one thing I struggle with, they've installed those self-help checkout desks. What are your thoughts on those self-help checkout desks? I am not a fan. I am not a fan at all. I would rather stand in a queue for half an hour and get to speak to a person than deal with a machine. And that might be a sign of my age. I might be now sounding like a grumpy old woman. When I was at school, I used to work in the local co-op. And originally, they put me on the deli counter, which I have to say, I didn't enjoy at all. Partly I would come home stinking of cheese and bacon, so it kind of put me off eating cheese and bacon. But the other thing, I just couldn't get the measurements right. You know, when people used to ask you for a quarter of a pound of cheese and you had to slice it on the wire block and work out what a quarter of a cheese might look like. Yeah, I just didn't enjoy it. And then they asked me to cover for somebody who was away on the till. Well, hey, I loved working on the till. But I'm going back to the days before we had scanning machines. So I'm going back to the days when we had good old buttons that you pressed. And I loved it. Absolutely loved it. I was in my element. It was like going back to being a little child with my little till I had. And when my mum used to unpack her shopping and I used to take the tin out and it had 15 pence on it or however much it cost in those days, and I would put it into my little till before it went into the cupboard. So yeah, I loved working on the till with little push buttons. Anyway, I digress. Self-help scanner machines at the supermarket, I do not like. And I have been known to just stand in a queue for a very long time when there are those free, because I prefer talking to the person. I think what finally did it for me is when I had 12 items and four of them had to be put through by the assistant. You know, when the item beeps and it says seek help and the assistant has to come over and tap their card and put a code in so the item can come through. Well, four items. One was a bottle of wine and they had to verify that I was over 18. And the other three items just beeped for reasons that are only ever known to the store and the machine. I would rather stand in a queue. There's my thoughts on those. Don't like those machines. Lastly, today's interview then, we're actually going across the bridge. And I recorded this interview on the Monday after Edinburgh Yarn Festival. So I'm going back a few weeks now. I have been working with Be Fab, Be Creative, yet we've never met. Because each time I've been in Edinburgh, our diaries didn't work out. We've only ever dealt with each other over the phone or via email or Instagram. I was so happy when this meeting came off and Soli jumped at the chance to do the interview with me. Be Fab, Be Creative are a fabric manufacturer. They are set up and run by sisters Soli and Zoe. And I feel incredibly fortunate to have found out about them and to have them included as part of the products that I offer in my business. Soli is always so helpful, offering advice, helping with tight deadlines, helping with my files when I'm trying to transfer them on the computer. And I think they've created this niche business which enables small businesses like mine to run small batches of our own designs digitally printed onto fabric from their great range. And it's a much needed facility and it's done with great customer service. For me, being able to print onto linen was very important as this was the fabric of the day at the time of the Dorset Button cottage industry. Finally getting to meet Soli was a real joy. I was pretty exhausted on the Monday and looking a wee bit washed out, a bit wan. Staying on the southwest side of the city and they are on the northeast in Leith. I caught the bus over and I walked the last bit on what was a glorious sunny morning. and they have a business unit on an industrial estate right in the corner. And as I arrived, Zoli had the big shutter open and the sun was just pouring into this fabulous space that they've got. I won't reveal any more. Have a listen in to our chat. Zoli, welcome to my podcast.
Hi. It's exciting.
Well, it's finally lovely to meet you.
Yes. Yeah, face to, or voice to name.
Yes, yeah, because I was looking back, I think it was January 2017 when I put my first order in with you. So we're here just over 2 years on now. And I know I've been in Edinburgh a couple of times and we're sort of planning something and then we sort of kept missing each other, didn't we?
So no, it's lovely to meet you.
Oh, thank you for finally meeting up and being prepared to be interviewed.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go back in time a little bit further then, and this is a family business, isn't it? It's you and your sister, Zoe. And tell us about how it all started. Where did that creative idea come from? Whose idea was it?
Zoe would definitely, who is my sister and business partner, would definitely say it's my fault.
Your fault.
So I got made redundant and kind of didn't know what to do when I grew up, or what I wanted to do when I grew up.
Do any of us?
I know, still not sure, own my own business, but yeah. And she had just had my niece, her daughter, and was vulnerable. So I wanted to get some fabric printed. I'm a designer by trade and decided that I wanted to get back to doing more of that. Couldn't really find anybody that wanted to print my, or wanted to print in small quantities the lengths that I wanted at high-end quality. I have a, or both of us have a bit of a reckless attitude that there isn't much we can't do other than maybe play tennis and fly a helicopter, because we're both dyslexic and the hand-eye coordination isn't very good. But yeah, so I did a bit of research and worked out how much it would be to buy a printer and put a bit of a business proposal to Zoe and her husband. And they laughed and told me to go away. And thought this was his little sister. And then about 2 weeks later, they were like, run those figures past me again. Ooh. I was like, okay, well. And yeah, so we'd worked together before. We'd done some property maintenance or property renovation. So we knew that we could work together, or more specifically, when to leave the room when we wanted to kill each other. Which is very important when you work with friends and family.
Definitely.
So we went about and did lots more research, and we put a survey out to, at the time, I think it was about 350 people we got survey responses back from, saying that there was a demand and it wasn't just me that thought there was a demand. So we went off and did, again, yeah, lots of research into the printer that we wanted. And about 9 months later, Bertha, the printer, arrived.
Bertha, the princess. Yes. And not only have I met Zoli today, I've met Bertha, the princess.
Indeed. So she's pre-loved. So we decided, rather than going with something that was brand new, we wanted something that was a bit better quality, but in order to afford that, she needed to be pre-loved. So she was looking for a home, had previously been working in Germany, and then she got shipped over, having been kind of refitted, and arrived with us one very sunny morning. So yeah, that's kind of the story behind it, really.
And that was back in 2012?
That was apparently 6.5 years ago. Yeah, 6.5 years ago, which is a bit terrifying. Because we keep on sort of saying, oh, it's 4 years ago. I've been saying that for 2 years, apparently. So,
time marches on.
LinkedIn reminded me that it was, 6.5 years ago, it's good.
And in that time, you've moved premises, haven't you?
Yeah, so recently we moved premises, which was a rather stressful day. We had a beautiful beautiful studio previously, with big arched windows and things like that, but a less than honourable landlord. So we decided that it was time to up sticks and move. And we're now in a not as beautiful, but much lovelier industrial space in Leith. So, yeah.
Which is a beautiful part of Edinburgh.
It's lovely. So.
And the space that you've got, it's high ceilings, it's bright white walls, isn't it? Good lighting.
Yeah, it's a nice sort of blank canvas to work in. And it's cosy as well. It doesn't feel like a industrial, or I don't feel like it feels like an industrial space.
And when I arrived this morning, you had the shutter open and yes. all the sun was shining in. We've got the shutter closed now, but you've got three little windows there, so you've got some yes. light, daylight coming in.
Yeah, so it is still, even with the shutter down, and hopefully we will have windows at some time in the near future. But yeah, so even with the shutters down and no windows, it's an incredibly bright space. As I say, we've got little windows, but... Yeah, it's lovely.
Yes.
Yeah, and a lot easier to get the printer into. So yes. the previous space was a little stressful. I think we had the same telehandler move it in as we did move it out in August. And the last time he did it, we had 12 millimetres to spare on either side for the doors. And bless him, he got it out and got it into this new space and then... told us, and he was very blasé. It was like, oh, it's fine, it'll be fine. And then he got it in down on the ground, and then he was like, I didn't want to tell you, but that's probably the hardest job I've ever done. And this is a guy who's been a telehandler since year dot, and we're like, thanks for lying. So yeah, so it was a stressful day. We knew it was a difficult job, but I'm glad he didn't tell us it was one of the hardest.
So he was probably being that swan, all sort of calm on the outside, so
absolutely.
He wasn't betraying that stress, but underneath kind of
yes,
flapping.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So it made that day a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that time then, as I say, I sort of heard of you back probably the tail end of 2016. So you've got quite a different range of customers, haven't you, and
very
clients
much so.
And yeah. Among the sort of textile and creative businesses?
Yeah, so we very specifically started out because we wanted to work with people who wanted to have high quality digital printing that effectively could be heirloom pieces, but at small quantities. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to be able to have or work with the designers that wanted to start out and grow their business and that we could grow with them. So we've done all sorts of jobs. So from cushions with a daughter's image on or a scarf with a daughter's image that had been drawn for a mum or a grandmother, up to... Our usual client is small designer makers doing all sorts of things. So often they're recreating their own practices, like yourself.
Yes.
So something that you create with your hands and then photograph,
yes.
and then we recreate it onto fabric, from screen printers, block printers, gosh, everything, literally. And then we've got obscure things like we print fabric for surfboards.
Oh,
so
okay.
That's quite cool.
Yeah.
Didn't know I was going to do that. And as a product designer, that's quite interesting,
yes.
from my point of view, because
yeah.
that's like a totally different realm. And then we've worked with some government sort of people. So we're doing a really interesting project with Screen Scotland at the moment. We've worked with National Galleries for Scotland, and we've been lucky enough to do a couple of jobs for Zandra Rhodes, who is not a fan of digital printing. She thinks it's a dark art, we're quite honoured to be able to work with her. She's very much a screen printer. And then we've done really cool projects, like doing the suit lining for Samuel L. Jackson. So we've done all sorts of weird and wonderful things, and all the bits in between. So
brilliant.
It's good.
And you have all sorts of different fabrics as well, don't you, that people can choose from, whether it be linen or silk or cotton.
So specifically we work with reactive ink technology. So that means that we can only print onto natural fabrics. And we chose that because we're fabric snobs and we like natural fabrics. So we were like, right, okay, that's what we want to work with. So we specialise in that. So we've got some beautiful linens, one of which is a natural. So you get quite different tones, as you know, with your lovely work. Silks, cottons, and a silk bamboo as well. So, everything from silk scarves to upholstery weight stuff. And again, and surfboards in between.
It must be really fascinating, though, because all these different creative people have all got their own style. And like you say, they're all making different things, whether it be like me with Dorset Buttons or artist or, to see what comes through the door each time on your emails, it must be quite fascinating.
It is. It's definitely the bit that I enjoy the most. So I am an incredibly, endlessly curious person. So it's always that thing of people going, oh, so I fancied doing this. that one's new. Okay, right. How can we do this? And it just makes it interesting. And it invariably, we work with the designers directly, which again is the thing we love.
Yes.
The projects where you're not working sort of directly with designers, they're just not as fun.
No, because you have that middle person and it's not quite the same connection, is it?
And you also don't get that Santa Claus feeling of them kind of getting their fabric and being really excited about it, which is what we get to be kind of on a weekly basis.
That's true.
Send out lovely parcels full of beautiful fabric
of
their designs.
Yes.
And there's something very different about having your designs in one format and then suddenly them being put onto fabric.
Yes.
It totally changes your perception of them. So that's nice.
And do you ever get time to print fabric for yourself? Because I know what it's like. Yeah. You know, it's a bit like me. I love knitting, but I rarely get time to make things for myself.
I guess the original idea behind the business was that I wanted to print my own designs. Not very good at that. I'm very much... I'm a much better facilitator than I am designer, I think. I don't particularly like being around my own designs. It's just, I love the flaws in other people's designs, but then I see them in my own and go, oh, that's awful. So I do sometimes print my own stuff. Normally if it's there's a birthday or whatever going on, then there'll be something produced, or we have spare fabric and things like that. So the plan is, obviously we also have a range of designer fabrics called Printed & Co.
Right.
Which you can buy by the meter. So we've got 12 designers. So about 250 designs available to purchase. All British designers, and at some stage I'll have a range, maybe one day, but we'll see. But at the moment it's nice working with other people.
And if you follow the BFab Be Creative Instagram account, sometimes you will be able to see Bertha in action, because you often put little snapshots in your stories, don't you, with what's on the print run at the time.
No, definitely.
Really good.
And it's been quite interesting, the stories, how people have suddenly gone, oh, that's how it's printed. Oh, then now I know how I can get my stuff done. And it's almost as if that connection between seeing Bertha printing has made it easier for people to understand what they can get printed, because they're seeing a bit more of what we're producing.
So
as a general rule, we do the lion's share of the printing on a Wednesday, and then the fallout is Thursday, Friday. So usually on a Wednesday there's pictures of Bertha or images of Bertha printing away. And she can be a bit noisy. She's much noisier on the stories than she is in real life.
Yes, she just seems quite noisy on the stories.
So I think the mic picks her up. does her a disservice.
And are we allowed to talk about your other machine as well?
Yes, Roberto.
Roberto.
Our temperamental Italian. Yes. So the process, basically, the fabric that we work with is pre-treated. So it has the fixer in that. And then the ink is laid on by Bertha, the printer, who's basically a bit like your desktop printer, only about the size of a minivan and a ton. So she's quite big. And then... from there, the fabric gets rolled into a steamer, which looks a little bit like a rocket launcher. And in fact, my niece, Zoe's daughter, calls it the rocket. So it gets steamed for a length of time, and then the fabric should be fixed and washed, tumble dried and ironed. And if I knew how much ironing there would be involved in this business, we probably wouldn't have started it. Yeah, we planned on outsourcing it all. Or just like getting one of those big roller ones that hotels have.
I've just looked across. I can now see the ironing.
It's just a sort of a nice steam iron.
Yeah.
Because we realised very quickly that was the only part of the process that we could absolutely never outsource, because it's our quality control.
Of course.
That's when we check whether the colours are correct,
of course,
if there's any ink spots or watermarks or anything like that. But it's fine. I've come to terms with the ironing. It took a while.
That's when you need some podcasts to listen to.
Absolutely. Exactly.
Are you allowed to have a favourite fabric?
Oh.
Or maybe you are, but you're not allowed to tell us. Or does it maybe vary with what's being printed on it?
It's a funny one, actually. So when we started out, we were really terrified of silk because it's expensive and precious.
Goodness, yeah.
And weirdly, it is the most well-behaved at every stage in the process.
Is it?
Yeah. So the satin, again, most expensive fabric, I would happily print all the day long. We pretty much, touch wood, never have a problem with it.
Okay.
And it washes well, it irons beautifully. So yeah, that one. That being said, the linen I love because it's incredibly wearable. So from a making point of view, I quite like sewing, though I rarely get time to do it. So linen is probably the one I enjoy using at the end.
Yeah, I bet the linen's a pain to iron, though.
Yes, it can be, absolutely. And then weirdly, the one we were least worried about is the one that causes the most problems. So cotton is the one that you will get. We have a kind of variable in colour tolerances that what we're happy with when we sample.
Yeah.
And cotton is the one with the widest variable.
Okay.
So it's really strange.
Yeah.
So it was completely turned on our head what we thought would be the most enjoyable fabrics to work with. And it's definitely, silk would be the easiest when it comes to printing on.
Ah.
So yes. But linen will always be a love of mine.
And I'm not going to give too much away, but I do have some ideas for silk, so watch
that's
out.
Exciting, yes. I've heard some of those, they will be good.
Yes, you'll have to listen in a bit longer for that. I assume that you sponsor sometimes a small little business, or maybe an up-and-coming business, or a new person. How's that come about?
So again, because the reason why we started the business was we were trying to get our own things printed, and that was quite difficult. Fabric printing can be a bit intimidating as well. So the idea is that maybe we're just really not very good business people, but we we have a bit of a motto or saying where we rise by lifting others. And I think, it's important to do that. So as a rule, every year in the summertime, we sponsor either a small business or a creative. And it can be a new business or an established artist that wants to get into doing something different. We have no rules because that's no fun. So basically application's really simple. It's just kind of tell us a bit about yourself and what you're planning on, what you would do with, and it's usually £300 that we offer. And we've had different people, so it's a case of, well, I'm a screen printer, but I don't have the space to do large things, so actually digital printing will allow me to do the larger pieces I want to do, so I can recreate the screen prints that I work in smaller scale and things like that. So it's about how we can help a business move forward or to the next step, or give them that nudge and lift up. And that's nice.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
You're talking there about business and running business and
the scary things.
Yeah, it is scary. But you've got involved with Creative Edinburgh, haven't you? And working alongside that in terms of self-development, people development, business development, kind of mentoring, that's kind of being collaborative with other creatives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So it first started out, we joined Creative Edinburgh when we started the business, and originally it was just a way of, I think it might have actually kept me relatively, I won't say completely sane, but relatively sane for the first sort of 2-3 years of the business, because it is quite isolating. Well, it's incredibly isolating, as you know.
Yeah.
And when you run your own business and you don't want to tell people when something's gone wrong in the day, or something's gone right in the day and you don't have the colleagues to go for that Friday night drink with.
Yes.
And,
yes.
you know, so you miss certain elements of not having one of those proper jobs, which I never enjoyed. But the social element of
definitely
celebrating successes, and also just being able to have a chat about, will this happen? What do you think?
And bounce ideas off each other.
Yeah. So it definitely started out that. And it was about a year into Creative Edinburgh's kind of when it started. So I was quite one of the early members. But so now I am a mentor for Creative Edinburgh. So every year, as a rule, it's just one person a year I will mentor through their sort of startup, which is nice and actually very useful, because you're not allowed to sort of tell them things, because that's not what mentoring's about, but often you can coax out of them the things that they want to be doing, and you write that down in your notebook too, going, I should do that too. That's a really good idea. So it's very much, I think, mentoring and being a mentee and mentor is good from both sides.
Yes, definitely. It's a two-way relationship.
Definitely. Yeah. And then last year I became one of the Creative Edinburgh steering group. So again, it's that's about just, I know a lot of the members. There's a, again, I will turn up to the opening of an envelope when it comes to Creative Edinburgh. I really like their events. So yeah, it's about what the members are telling us, and we feed that back to kind of higher up the food chain, as it were, which is nice. And also, actually, I haven't told you this, I reckless stupidly said, there was a panel discussion a couple of weeks ago about freelancing, and I chatted to Yasmin, who runs Creative Edinburgh, and I was like, oh, it'd be really good if we could do one on sort of retail and how to get into retail. And she was like, that's a fantastic idea. Do you want to do it? It's like, sure, okay. So yes, so I'm currently mulling through sort of who to get for a panel and arranging a panel discussion. So that'll be in the summer as well. So that's quite exciting.
Yeah.
So yes,
yeah.
And terrifying.
It's often the way, though. If you come up with the idea, they go, oh,
and
yes,
they're like, oh, you should run with that. Yes. No, that was not what I meant. So yeah, but yeah, that's fun.
What have you got lined up for the sort of future?
Oh, so yeah, we've spent the last, 6 months sort of settling into our new space. And it's taken us a little bit longer than we planned, or we've enjoyed doing it.
Yes.
So we've not had the distractions of silly landlords. So that's been really nice. And we have been doing all the things that have been on the to-do list. So that's we're beginning to get much nicer structure. So the plan at the moment is we're looking to create some desk space for a couple of extra creatives within our studio. Hopefully someone who is textile or kind of that kind of orientated. Potentially two or three desk spaces, depending on what their discipline is, which will be lovely because, again, I quite like my own company, but Zoe is generally in 2 days a week, and I'm in the other three on my own. So it'll be nice to have other people in the studio.
Yes,
although I'm a little bit worried about, we were talking about whether or not that might be just a massive distraction, and my admin productivity will decrease massively. So that, the intention is to start promoting our Printing & Co range, so the range of designer fabrics, much better, because we need to get better at that. So yeah, talking to interior designers and things like that. And just actually getting better at being sort of talking about what the big projects that we work at.
Yes.
You know, we were talking about the fact that we've worked with some big designers, and those are weirdly the ones we never talk about.
Yes.
Because we're a bit, it's almost like we're embarrassed because we're just this sort of little company who actually just really likes working with small designer makers. So saying that you've done a suit lining for Samuel L. Jackson seems a little bit like, did we? Really? I mean, we've got video evidence of it. But
it wasn't just a dream.
Yeah, it still seems a little bit odd. And all sorts of other, cool people. Like, that we did this wedding suits for the Weasley twins, both the Weasley twins' wedding suits. Have we mentioned this on social media? Not yet. It's mad.
Yeah.
So it's just about actually becoming a little bit more comfortable with the fact that, no, we actually do a really good job of what we do, and we try hard and we care, and we've worked some pretty cool clients, and also the little ones that we will always carry on talking about and lifting up and things like that. So yeah, so just getting a bit better at talking.
Yes.
About.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not alone. You're not alone. I think it's it comes with the territory, really.
Totally.
I think we're all not good at self-promotion.
It's imposter syndrome.
Yeah,
we all,
yes,
you know,
exactly.
I think everybody, I'm doing, again, through Creative Edinburgh, a going for growth thing. So it's businesses that are established and just kind of going over the things that we all know about in our businesses and things like that, which has been really useful. And it is so funny that all of there's six people in the room and they're all established businesses. And it was funny, everybody went, I knew some of the people on it, and they were like, but these people are, like, they're really good.
Yeah.
Why are they on this course? And why am I on, who, I shouldn't be on this course, I'm not, type thing. And everybody's actually just, still learning.
Yes.
And it's quite nice to know that. And the conversation in that room, in that very safe space, is, I still feel like I'm a bit of an imposter and I don't really know what I'm doing. And we all know we do, but it's easier to doubt yourself sometimes.
Oh, definitely, definitely. Or, and also because we are all in our own little space.
Bubbles, totally.
Yeah.
So it's seeing yourself through other people's eyes sometimes and realising that the smoke and mirrors isn't smoke and mirrors and that is actually what you do.
Yeah.
But it feels like, you're like, do I do this?
Yeah.
I've been doing that for 6 years.
Well, I shall be looking on your Instagram account to see.
I suppose the other thing we were talking about, we made a conscious decision in January that because we needed to get better at talking about our designers and letting our designers talk about themselves as well.
Yes.
So we're doing this Instagram takeover and a blog post every month, which also suddenly means that posting blogs becomes easier because I know that once a month someone else I'm sending out lovely information about a designer.
Yes.
And they've answered all these lovely questions and we've kind of caught up with them and that's quite an interesting thing.
Yeah.
So I know at least once a month I am definitely sending out some good information and there's going to be some lovely content and then it sort of suddenly takes the pressure off you putting content out.
Yeah.
So that's been really nice. And it's nice, again, that worry of like, will people say no? Because why would they want to do an Instagram takeover? And, you know, we've got a pretty good following, so yes, why wouldn't they? But that fear of, oh, maybe they won't want to. And if people don't, it's usually because, oh no, I've got too much on this year.
Exactly.
Or they're worried. So that's been a really nice process, actually, just asking people. So we might have to get you on. I'm going to put it on the podcast there, and you'll be like, no.
Oh, social media is certainly something I've got to work at more. You know, I do look at some people's accounts and think, wow, that's amazing what they've done and how do they do that? And it is about planning, isn't it? And thinking about what information you have got and not being afraid to sell yourself and shout about what you've done, like you say, your successes and the things that have gone well. And I think more and more these days now, people like to see the person behind the business and they like to know the good things and the bad things. You know, it's not just about we're all this success and everything's going super well. We don't want it to be false. They want to know the roller coaster on, the human, exactly.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. We had, a social media audit. Someone randomly, I engaged with someone on Instagram. I commented on a comment that they'd made on Just a Card campaign and they were like, oh, do you want me to I'm just starting my business, do you want me to do an audit? I said, well, yes, of course, that would be wonderful. And again, a lot of the information came back, I should have known that. It's all good, obvious stuff. And some of it wasn't, some of it was really interesting and new. But one of the main things was you need to put your faces on our And primarily we work through Instagram. On our Instagram, we need to be more prominent on our website and things like that. And it's absolutely true. But both of us hate being behind.
Yes.
Like we like being on one side of the camera. It's just not that side of the camera.
Yes.
So it is. It's not something that comes naturally.
No. I've certainly struggled with that. And my listeners will know that I've talked about this quite a few times before because I'm not into taking selfies. I don't even naturally think about it, you know. And just having been at Edinburgh Yarn Festival this weekend, I think I've got two photos on my camera. You know, I just didn't think to take the photos because I'm kind of just so swept up in the moment of talking to people. But I do know, I mean, I think it took me 2 or 3 years before I put a photo of myself up there.
Yeah.
And I am finding it hard to put my face out there publicly, but I'm getting a little bit better at it. Yeah.
Now, the thing we were advised was do it with stories first.
Yes.
Because then it's gone in 24 hours.
Yes.
And it's not that bad. And it's odd. Again, I've got clients who are friends who I have never met. And we'll have little conversations, and usually again on Instagram. And then one particular client was like, oh, you're so brave, I can't. So I did an introduction to the studio, and which we'd been meaning to for about 3 months. So it was like, I'll finally do this. And it was like, oh, you're so brave, I can't believe you've done that. That was amazing, it was really, really good. And you're like, actually, you know what? Once you pressed go on it, suddenly, actually, that wasn't that hard.
Yeah.
I should probably do that more often.
Yes.
But yeah, but there's something about, you know, sitting across from someone and seeing their reaction is dead easy. But putting it out into, like, the ether.
Exactly.
And you have no idea whether people's faces are like, what is she on about?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Oh, that was funny.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's whether or not the person that you see reflected in other people's faces is going to come across.
I understand. Yeah. I think though as well, that just like the little things you do with the printing, people love to know about processes. You know, they like to see, you know, your desk and your materials.
Which is always messy.
Yeah, mine is too. So I think it's good when we do step up and show.
And it's showing sometimes the messy. And our studio is a working studio.
Yes.
It's got fabric that needs ironed and yeah, stuff going on.
Yeah.
But that's actually quite nice. And weirdly, I completely get that going into other people's studios or other manufacturing. It's like kid in a candy store.
Yes.
I love it. But yet, because it's my workspace, it's not, what I do is exciting, but the minutiae of what I do doesn't seem exciting.
Right.
And then suddenly you're like, oh, taking fabric out of a steamer roll, and it's brighter, because it's always brighter when it comes out.
Okay.
And you're like, that's exciting. I should start showing that more often.
Yes.
And it's just, but yeah, just remembering all the bits.
It is, because you're in the process of well,
just
one
doing.
Stage that you're doing. So to then get your phone out and...
Yes. Yeah, and sometimes it is. It's like, we don't post all of the things we print because sometimes the phone rings and you know... Or, stuff is happening.
Or it might be a top secret project that the customer doesn't want you to expose at the moment something. Yeah.
So, but it's nice to be able to show what we can do.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much, Soli. It's really fascinating. And as I say, I'm just so happy to finally met you.
We've
spoken
lovely.
So many times on the phone. And it's really... So, putting the face. Putting
yes,
the face. Just
absolutely.
What we're talking about.
I know. No, it's been lovely. Thank you for asking me.
No, thank you. And in fact, I'm going to be really naff and I'm going to be asking Soli if we should take a selfie at the end of this.
Let's do it. Oh, no.
So you might well find a picture of the two of us in the show notes. So thank you ever so much.
Thank you.
Soli was wonderful to chat to interview, and I had a great time visiting her. It's always good to put a face to a name and to see their workspace as well, to see what happens when I send a photo through their online website, and to see how it comes out at the other end as a piece of fabric. We had so much to talk about and so much more that we could have carried on talking about. I'm sure at some stage one day we might revisit and do another interview with Soli. And I am delighted to say that Soli and Zoe have just come off the back of a very busy time attending award ceremonies. They were a finalist in the Made in Scotland Awards for Manufacturer of the Year. And I am incredibly happy to say they are the Scottish SME Business Awards 2019 winner for Small Business of the Year. Brilliant news and richly deserved. They're just great. Highly recommend them as business people and the products that they produce. Whew! Got through it. That's it. Voice is feeling a little bit tickly, tiny bit hoarse, not too bad. It is a shame that it's taken this long to get this going. I do hope that this means I can get back on track, and I hope to get the next episode out to you in between Aberdeen Yarn Festival and going down to Woolfest. That's the aim. In the meantime, you can find the show notes on the website, tjfrog.co.uk. And if you'd like to get in touch, either drop me a line at tanya@tjfrog.co.uk or via the contact page on the website, or on Facebook and Instagram as tjfrogsky, Twitter as tjfrogmakes, and Ravelry as tjfrog. The music's by Ron Paynton and is licensed from Melody Loops and called One Frog for a Prince. Bye for now. Till next time.